This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Proposed new rules by the U.S. Labor Department could weaken protections for migrant farm workers. Labor Department wants to deregulate the H-2A visa program, part of an attempt to lower costs for landowners and increase the number of legal farm workers in this country. The number of H-2A visas issued by the department has tripled over the last decade, and that's a response to seasonal labor shortages on U.S. farms. Jorge Valencia is senior field correspondent in Mexico City for public radio station KJZZ, and he joins us now. Jorge, welcome back.
Hey, Frank. Good morning.
Good to have you here. Listen, remind us, you're on Phoenix time, but you're in Mexico City right now, but tell us about H-2A workers. Remind us what that means. What is that visa?
So this is a visa program that allows farm owners to legally hire temporary workers on a seasonal basis. And like you said, this visa program tripled over the last decade. It went from about, almost tripled, from 82,000 10 years ago to 240,000. And this is a program that is used widely across the country. North Carolina is actually the top fourth recipient after, I believe, Georgia, Florida, and the state of Washington. So this is pretty crucial. I mean, this is labor that many farms across the country, berries and tobacco in North Carolina, rely on to be able to harvest their crops.
And I think the last I saw, we're talking about somewhere around 250,000 of these visas issued every year, or in the last year.
Yeah, last fiscal year it was about a quarter million, and we're seeing increases every year.
So it's a visa program, very specific rules on how you qualify, and very specific rules for growers on how migrant workers will be treated, right?
Yes, exactly. So, for example, these farm companies or associations, which is really how this visa is really acquired through, they're required to give housing to their employees. And this is actually one of they have to set basically wages, and the housing has to be set. There's certain very specific requirements, right? And the reason why I bring up the housing is because this is one of the key changes that the Labor Department is proposing to do this year. What they're saying is that they want to, to be fair, what the Labor Department frames it is like, we want to lower the burden on farmers. And it is true. This is a fairly democratic process. And one of those things is they're saying that we want to allow farmers to have those living quarters that they are required to give so that these workers will live. We want them to be inspected less often. We want them to be inspected every 2 years instead of the current, which is every one. And then there's also the option for the farm owner basically to issue their own report to the state agency once a year. This is problematic because it is commonplace for workers to be living, quite frankly, in squalor, in really unsanitary situations in which perhaps there's vermin in these facilities where they're living, or perhaps there might be 10 people living into a room. So this is the type of, how the visa works, and this is an example of one of the changes that the Labor Department is proposing to do.
Yeah, but to be clear now, there are standards, and I think what you're saying is right now enforcement is somewhat weak. If you go around and go to these farms where H-2A workers are working, in many cases, these farms are not in compliance now. And you're suggesting that the rules might be weakened so that growers are actually reporting on themselves. They will no longer be inspected, and it'll be a 2-year instead of a 1-year cycle. And there's weak enforcement already. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I mean that's basically you hit the nail on the head. I mean the Labor Department's proposal, which is more than 400 pages, they don't actually use this word, but it's more or less they're saying, like, at least on this issue of the housing, we're just going to let these farm associations self-report. Yeah.
All right. And also, there's a new rule regarding that affects, in a sense, the amount of income or the amount of receipts. It doesn't affect, I think, if I understand it right, not necessarily the hourly pay or the pay, but travel reimbursement. Tell us about that.
Okay, so one of the requirements for this visa, it says, okay, you farm owner or farm association who's hiring this worker, you have to reimburse this worker for the travel from their point of origin, wherever it is that they live, to your farm. And so instead, they're saying that with this document, the Labor Department is saying, you know what, this is kind of a burden for these farm owners because it's hard to figure out where exactly these people live. Most of these people come from rural areas. So what we're going to do to simplify things is we're only going to require the farm to reimburse from the place where they got their visa to the place where the farm is. So this in practice, what this means, that this is several hundred dollars less that the worker is going to receive. And that perhaps to us, it doesn't sound like much of a burden, but most of the people who take these jobs are very poor people. And so they have to borrow lots of money, what to them is sort of small fortunes, in order to be able to go from, I don't know, the state of Veracruz or the state of Chiapas, which are pretty remote, to Monterrey, Mexico, which is a city in the north where most of these visas are issued. They have to borrow large amounts of money to be able to just get there. They have to wait for days. And then they travel to, I don't know, a farm outside of Fayetteville, North Carolina, or a farm outside of Tucson, Arizona. And so as part of the simplification, which basically what will happen if this goes through is that there will be a much higher burden on the worker. In a sense, it could be interpreted as if the worker is, in effect, paying in order to be able to work.
All right. Well, very quickly, Jorge, what's the next step for this? These new rules, which we barely knew about. In fact, you were kind of lucky to discover that these rules were being proposed in the first place. Where are they now?
So the Labor Department had a 60-day comment period that just ended this week. And like you said, I mean, it's kind of bizarre that this change that would affect 250,000 workers has totally flown under the radar. I just ran across it because I was doing some research about Sheriff Joe Arpaio and people who are here in Mexico who he sent to Mexico. So this comment period just closed. The Labor Department is going to take this into consideration, and then they will issue the formal rules just administratively after that process.
Yeah, let me apologize to you. You weren't lucky to find it. You were doing hard work to find it. We're lucky to get it. Thank you, Jorge, so much for talking with us. Jorge Valencia, Department, who's a reporter in Mexico City for public radio station KJZZ. Thanks, Jorge.
Thank you, Frank.
Joining us now to get an idea what this means in the state of North Carolina is a PhD candidate at UNC Chapel Hill and the chair of the governing board of North Carolina Farm Worker Health Program in North Carolina. Nathan Dollar joins us now. Hello, Nathan.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Frank.
Do you have any idea? I mean, I know in broad strokes what this would mean in terms of, well, let's talk about the number or how the numbers have grown of H-2A workers in North Carolina. Let's start there.
Right. So as Jorge mentioned, the program has expanded dramatically over the past 10 years. In North Carolina in particular, since 2012, the program has increased by 76%. So what that means is that the total number of H-2A positions certified by the United States Department of Labor increased from 10,500 approximately in 2012 to 18,500 in fiscal year 2018. So agricultural employers nationwide appear to increasingly prefer H-2A workers for a number of reasons.
Yeah, what are some of them?
Well, one of those is that these H-2A visas restrict foreign workers to a particular employer for a set period of time, and the foreign workers are dependent on the employer for that job. So with respect to the transportation costs that Jorge mentioned and the proposed changes to the lack of reimbursement for those costs from the home, frequently H-2A workers who have borrowed money to travel to the U.S. arriving indebted, and they're reluctant to speak up or report violations or breaches of the H-2A contract for fear of being forced to return home, not being called back the next year, et cetera.
Well, that gets right to enforcement here in the state of North Carolina. We're talking about further relaxing rules that don't seem to be well enforced, at least nationally. What's the situation here in North Carolina in terms of enforcement for living conditions?
So housing in North Carolina, substandard housing for migrant farm workers in general, is a big problem in the state of North Carolina. As Jorge mentioned, some of these workers, H-2A workers in particular, they live in converted barns and or packing houses. They are single family dwellings with multiple adults cohabitating in one room, and also motels with multiple adults living in each room. So when you have multiple people sharing one-room apartments or motels, some of the problems include bedbug infestations, insufficient bathroom and shower facilities, insufficient and or no laundry facilities, which is a big problem when workers come home from the field and their clothes are covered in pesticides, no storage for personal belongings, and also no place to store and prepare food. So with respect to North Carolina, the North Carolina Department of Labor is charged with enforcing the 1986 North Carolina Migrant Housing Act, which sets a very minimal standard for migrant housing. They're charged with enforcing that, and they have a long history of not diligently enforcing that.
How does it work? I mean, if you go to the farm, it sounds like there's a lot of this going on. It wouldn't be too hard to find it. You just step on a farm and do an inspection. And then what's next if you find substandard housing and you're the Department of Labor here in North Carolina?
Well, so in my experience working in migrant health outreach in the western part of the state, often what would happen is if we would report a violation of the Migrant Housing Act to the North Carolina Department of Labor, they may send someone out. And they may report a violation, and then they the grower is allowed to abate that violation or that fine or that penalty, right? And essentially, this is a situation where the grower or the owner of the migrant housing says, we recognize the problem, we're going to fix it, and then the fine is abated, and therefore the fine is not ever paid. And so, therefore, the regulatory teeth, so
to
speak.
Is there any follow-up to see if they've lived up to the bargain? Do they follow up and say, yes, you did?
That remains unseen.
You know, I wonder what this change will mean, because it's perverse in terms of my understanding of economics. If there's a labor shortage, that puts labor in the position of improving their living conditions and improving their wages. But in this case, we're seeing that the labor shortage is resulting in worse conditions, less leverage, and lower income for migrant workers. What kind of impact is it going to have?
I think this goes back to the issue of why agricultural employers increasingly prefer H-2A workers. These workers come from poorer countries with poor wages and lower cost of living. U.S. workers, on the other hand, require wages that would support the cost of living in the U.S. So one of the key requirements of being certified to participate in the H-2A program is being able to certify there's a lack of availability of workers.
Nathan Dollar is a PhD candidate at UNC Chapel Hill, chair of the governing board of the North Carolina Farm Worker Health Program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Rhiannon Giddens is up next on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.